Yeah.
All right, so we're going to call the meeting to order.
I call the March 10th, 2023 of the whole meeting of the Glencoe Park District to order, please. Lisa, would you call the roll? No time.
Sure, it's 7:03 p.m. Member Boren?
Yes.
Member Covey?
Here.
Member Ludden?
Here.
Member Underdog?
Here.
Chair Brooks?
Here. It is our practice not to address questions at this time. I don't believe there's anybody here from the public, so we can skip over that. Next on the agenda, social spaces for Connect Glencoe. Lisa will introduce John and Josephine.
Well, she just
from
did.
Altima New to present their designs. Well,
John and Josephine from Altima New. They're here to answer some of the questions that the board came up with at the last meeting regarding the social spaces. Remember that these are not budgeted items. These are items that we're trying to figure out a cost for, should we find a donor for them. So that's where we're at now. So throw it over to you, John.
Okay. By the way, it's been ages since we've been here. And since then, the Park District has done an amazing job getting grants. It's unbelievable.
Thank you.
Congratulations. Okay, just to remind you what we were here for in the beginning, create the recreation multi-use trail that accommodate all users, right?
Mm-hmm.
Act as a sign for aesthetic and park experiences, promote exercise and health in the community. And you've seen this before, the various pieces of the puzzle that we gave nicknames, pretty much. And as you can see, there are more events as you head towards downtown. The areas that have a lot going on are the quad at Park and the Lincoln Playground. He's looking at me strangely because this is not the presentation he saw.
Nobody like to keep me on my toes.
So here's the quad. It's packed full. It's got the entryway, it's got a memorial, it's got the church, it's got a mini arboretum, so it doesn't need an intervention. And here, I'm going north around the south. So now here's the sculpture garden that we call it. It's got magnificent trees. The idea is to have something very mellow here. And this was the idea. Sort of a quiet respite, a couple of these around the sculpture, something different, something relaxing. And you can see here, over on the left, what it will look like in profile.
Where would those go around that sculpture? Where are you thinking?
They're movable, first of all.
Oh, okay.
So we were thinking that there'd be three or four around here that we try and keep away from the houses.
Yeah.
And have it focus more on the sculpture itself.
Perfect.
You mean they're movable by residents, or
no, we
can put them where we choose to
put them? You
need a lot of help. Yeah. Okay.
That's good, so that you won't be able to drag them around.
No. And eventually we talked about putting in spring ephemerals here.
Okay.
Long term. The sunken field, multi-use field, we're going to have some native planting, and then because there are going to be pickup games, hopefully, we are introducing a very heavyweight long bench that will be put at the side of the field. And it will be used probably like those kids are using it for some amazing reason. We all like sitting at the back and putting our feet down. But the idea that could be an active space, so there's something really
interesting. Do you guys see that facing the sunken field or facing the railroad?
At the moment, it's facing the field.
So it'd be overlooking the houses?
It's at the bottom of the slope.
Okay. So facing the south.
Facing east.
Oh, so facing,
here's the sunken field.
So facing there. Towards the homes.
Yeah.
Although that could be. Yeah, okay.
There's a big brush line there.
And it's pretty
on
the west side of the field. Yeah. And then, I don't think any intervention was necessary here. We've got the playground, interactive water feature, train, etc. The meadow, as you go in here, it's much less activity. So we thought this would be a good place for an intervention. And these are what we showed you way back at the start. But the idea was to have something that you could sit there, gather, or do some exercises. And it would be really quite a small space along the trail.
Question?
Yes.
You could stain those so they wouldn't necessarily have to be concrete color.
Yes.
Yeah, you could.
Doty's making those.
Doty's making those. The range is typically in the beiges, the slate grays, and then you can add, if you want color, you can add color.
What's your allergies?
Yeah, we can have something that will fit. And then the color? It opens out here just south of Walden. And we're going to suggest one of these. All these items are, you just come off the trail, you run along the top, you get back on the trail. So the idea is low, you don't see it from the surface. Really inobtrusive.
Well, what's the height of that off the ground? You have the detail there, but I can't tell.
Cute.
I can think.
Cool, thanks. Oh, thank you.
Lisa, that looks like you on the bench.
It does kind of look like Lisa.
Yeah, that's just like, Actually,
that really
does.
Is that a yoga position?
No.
24.
All right.
24 inches?
We don't know how high. Well, it says 96, 24, 18, and I would
guess 18. Yeah. So is that right next to the trail we're putting that?
It'd be
tight to the trail.
Have okay.
Look at the top
where
the green is, and it's sitting in the same material as the trail.
Oh, I see it. Okay. Yeah. Okay.
I still don't understand what the thing in the middle of the page on the left is that looks like a candy bar.
You're talking about this one?
Yeah. What is that supposed to be?
This one.
I think it's his prototype.
Yeah.
But what we are actually talking about is the zigzag thing.
Yeah, it'd be the zigzag, but at the moment it's in that color, but as was pointed out, we could change it.
So I think they want to make sure is it's just not that one little piece.
No,
that would be the whole zigzag.
It looks like a headstone for a commissioner.
Oh, godly.
COVID-19.
No, that was humor.
Too soon, as people say. Too soon. I make my COVID-19 jokes. Too soon. Yeah.
Okay, and then as we get right up to the north, we've got sort of woodland and a meadow. And close to Walden, steppers like this, you just come off the trail, run along them, and back off. Again, we can pick a beige color.
And the height of the tallest one of those?
24 inches.
Oh, the tallest one's 24? Okay.
Yeah, right there.
So is it 24?
You want me to read them all?
Yeah.
It's 24, 20, 16, and 12.
Okay.
All right. And then the spiral bend. And initially, we were thinking of locating it here, sort of pushed in off the trail into the trees. But since we've thought about it, that it's better to keep it far away from the houses and surrounded by trees. So instead of being here with a property line there, even though the house is set back, we've switched it over and brought it in. So
okay.
It's amidst the trees, and it's about 70 feet from the property line, 95 feet from the house, and surrounded by existing trees.
So I'm trying to figure out how far that is in from the intersection. It's not that far in, right?
Not hugely. That's about 150 feet.
Oh. It's about halfway in the middle of the park, basically, mm-hmm. Right?
Yeah.
Probably another 75 feet, 80 feet from
there. At least, yeah. If you think this to here is 70, that's 70, so it's maybe 100.
I think that's what you're measuring.
Yeah. About 100 feet from the intersection. Can you see that?
Mm-hmm. So in this photo, the green is the path.
Yep.
Yes. I should have explained that, I'm sorry.
Which is not green, actually.
We're trying to make it fit in the grass. And that is the lot.
Does anybody have any questions? Concerns?
This last one I'd be a little concerned about. The parapets
I need to drive by it tomorrow so I can visualize it better.
Yeah.
See, because I know that house on the corner there is.
The house in the corner has quite a few trees in front of it as well. Maybe I'll go through them. See what you feel.
Are we supposed to have a discussion about these?
Yeah.
Tonight? Oops.
Yes, we are supposed to have discussion.
I just love the shape
of it. I do like the shape
of it. To be totally honest with my fellow commissioners, I'm having a hard time getting excited about these. The one that I like the best, for what it's worth, is the zigzag one. But the steps one, the one that goes 12, 18, 20,
the
24,
back.
I just kind of feel like it's kind of pointless. Maybe it, I don't know, you could argue it's kind of neat, but like it's not enough steps to make a significant difference to anybody's health.
But maybe we should talk about what our objective is. It's a very good point. I don't think you're going to do this circuit and feel like you had a workout, but I'm not sure.
Right.
I mean,
well,
I don't
like,
look at it that way.
I acknowledge, like, you could just view it as like a fun thing for a small kid to run up and down.
Or
right.
Lisa.
Yeah.
Her friends.
Lisa and her friends. Yeah.
Box jumping, I guess.
The bench by the sunken park just feels, at least the way I'm imagining it, then it's like on the downhill side of the native plantings.
Mm-hmm.
And then I just don't understand. It's kind of where that kid on the bicycle is.
Go back.
It's on
right.
The park side of the path.
Right. I mean,
initially we have quite a grouping of benches there. Mm-hmm. And it's being whittled down.
Oh.
So it's to the left of the path. Right.
Where those two kids played soccer is just
yeah.
There.
Yeah.
Okay. Or whatever they're playing.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
But it's facing the houses. I mean, mm-hmm. That just feels like.
Well, those houses are pretty far from there.
No, I'm not worried about it being close to the houses. I'm just wondering who in their right mind is going to walk down the trail and decide I'm going to walk around this bench and sit looking at the houses when.
I think that's like if people are playing a game there, if they're playing lacrosse. Isn't that where they play lacrosse?
We do have nets up there right now.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Or people play soccer there.
That's why we've left that.
Or baseball. It's just our one big open area, free play area. Yeah. So different sports get played there.
And then the commas one. I find it kind of neat. I just.
The last one?
The one that looks like apostrophes.
Yeah.
I think it's kind of neat, but. I guess I just wonder, you know, how many times, it's not that it always has to have 12 people on it like this photo does, but how many times are there going to be that many people around there, and do we need that much seating there, and it just kind of feels like, yes, it's neat, but are we just building stuff because we can, not because the park really needs cement structures there? That's my two cents. I'm open to being convinced otherwise.
So I'm going to chime in with you for a second here. I can see all of this being awesome if the park is used in the way that we think it's going to be used, but we just don't know how it's going to be used. And I was going to ask, is there a way to step into this, to think about, do we do one thing now, see if it takes off, if people like it, and then we think about, okay, there's an appetite for this. Let's build another or another. I don't know the financing impact, I don't know if it's part of the grants, but to me it seems like we are putting a whole lot of eggs in a basket of building for somewhat of the unknown here, and that's what makes me a little bit nervous. I don't want people to think, wait, they built these six things and no one's using it. If you build one thing and no one uses it, it's almost like, okay, well, at least only built one. And I wasn't here on the February 18th meeting, but I don't know what the options are to step into this.
So that's if I said earlier, these are unfunded.
Yeah.
These are unfunded mandates. We don't have the funding.
Perfect.
This is not part of the grant. This is
a heck of a lot better.
So if this was supposed to be, if we wanted to fundraise in these,
yeah.
So you could absolutely step into them. You could
okay,
say
perfect.
Someone wanted to fund one and not the other one,
yeah.
Or maybe down the line the board wants to do one and not the other one. It's
yeah.
Definitely something that it could be stepped into. I guess the point to put in the bid was just to kind of an idea of how much it costs, because we have no idea.
Yeah, no, I think that's smart.
So we, in our plan, we paid for design of this whole thing, and this area is more from the beginning, from fitness stations to this. It's kind of more through the just discussion, which is great, came out with these ideas. So it's something we can say, you know, we don't want to put it in the bin because we don't really have the funds or anybody, or we want to put in just to see what they cost, yeah. Or we want to put one in. It's really...
It is flexibility.
It's totally board-driven. These amenities are all totally board-driven, so whatever the board wants to do, it's open to.
If you're looking for private funding for some of these things, it may not be about how excited you and I are about these things, because the donor is probably going to say, well, I like the spiral thing. Mm-hmm. That's what I'm going to pay for, and then we have to decide yes or no. Mm-hmm. So...
I agree with that, but my reaction to it is still like these are problems of plenty.
Yeah.
But like just because somebody will pay the $200,000 or whatever it's going to cost for the apostrophes doesn't mean we should take the money and build it. Right.
Good point.
How much does it cost?
The apostrophes.
Oh. Sure. Give us.
The installed price, but we're not including the servicing underneath, is
$20,800.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Apparently,
I overreacted.
$20,000
was horrifying.
And that's the most expensive one of the six.
Ah. That's good to know.
Oh, that's good to know. I think going back.
That's the most expensive one?
Yeah.
Yeah, I was wondering about the order of magnitude on this. There's a movement in urban planning called tactical urbanism. And rather than spend a whole lot on something, for instance, the blocks that you have there, what they would do under tactical urbanism is basically make boxes out of plywood and stick them out there and see if the kids like to use it.
Mm-hmm.
And if they like to use it, we make it permanent or we can change it. And that might be a way to explore some of these options without spending a whole lot of money.
I would be worried if we put something out of plywood, people in the summer would be like, oh my God, you're putting something in plywood out there that looks so
that
cheap.
Looks junky.
I don't know if that would really give you what I know what you're talking about, mm-hmm. and I totally agree with you. In this community, I think they just would go to the. Oh, you're just putting something junky out there. They wouldn't understand the method. It would take a lot of education. How would you get that education out to the? Because we know how well people read. How, you know, to what we're doing. But it's no, definitely something.
Chris might have some stumps left over from the last project.
You know what, I think I see what everybody's saying. I mean, just because you can doesn't always mean you should. But at the same time, you know, we've heard over and over again opportunities for donations that are maybe a little bit bigger than a bench, but are a little bit less than, you know, $250,000 for a playground.
Yeah.
At the same time, you know, we're not going to know in some ways what our success is going to look like. I mean, we know that the train, the splash pad, the playground are going to drive huge amounts of traffic right off the bat.
Mm-hmm.
But these elements are really like the quiet spot to sit and check the news, you know, meet up with a friend. I mean, I can see that spiral on a college campus, no doubt. Like people hanging out, reading, but at the same time at the corner of Maple Hill is that, that's not like the epicenter of the quad. That's just the corner of Maple Hill and Old Green Bay. So, you know, I mean, putting them in the bid doesn't necessarily mean we have to do them. It just gives us a hard price for that date, what they would cost.
Chris, correct me if I'm wrong, but didn't the sustainability committee talk about the need for more passive?
They did. There was some dialogue about, you'll have to correct me if I don't have all the terminology, about having some passive park areas that are geared towards like multi-generational interactions and places that are, you know, a spot to hang out. And, you know, we have those places in some places in our park system, but they're not spread out through all the parks. If you're not looking for the playground experience, where
mm-hmm.
do you go?
Mm-hmm.
You know, maybe you sit at Hometown or Starbucks, but if you're not looking to buy a cup of coffee, you know, you have the shelter at Berlin, but there isn't, yeah. you know, other than the Overlooks. I mean, those are really the locations where you get that, like, passive park use, but some of this could definitely fit into kind of just hangout chill spots that aren't,
you know, so open and visible like the gazebo or the overlooks where, you know, we know on a beautiful day that those are like the places to be in town.
I just wanted to throw that out because I didn't know where that came from, but they just talked about that in the last meeting minutes I read.
And just if I think about the risks, I'm sorry.
Oh, I have nothing important to say. Just filling space.
Well, I'm not sure I do either, but the path, the Connect Glenco is clearly first and foremost a path, right? And there almost certainly need to be or should be benches along a path so people can stop and tie their shoe or have a more intense conversation with whoever they're walking with or take a phone call without walking or whatever. And so we're going to put wood or plastic benches along this trail anyway, I think.
How many?
Right.
Oh, I don't know.
Is it 16 or 18?
So my point being that
so we do have benches.
The zigzag bench or the zigzag element could replace a more conventional bench, right? Or two or three of those along the length of it could replace several.
That's
right.
Yes.
Or the steps up and the steps down effectively is a kind of bench, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And both of them are kind of like I could imagine if I was running with my 6-year-old son who doesn't exist anymore, but if I ever have any more children, they, you know, I could see them running along the zigzag or up and down the thing and kind of, you know, having it be a sort of child's play thing as well. So in that way, I view those two elements as multi-purpose. They can serve adults either tying their shoe or having a conversation or a kid's play thing. The ones like the apostrophes or the circles with the big circle in the middle with the people doing push-ups are more like, I just kind of question, how is that really going to get used? I'm sorry I keep calling it the apostrophes, but the spiral bench, maybe at Veterans Park, Veterans Memorial Park, like there's no, I don't know that there's really any place to sit down there now, and it's the closest place to downtown.
There's one bench.
Right.
Yeah.
I actually thought of it on the
as well.
Yeah.
Because it's sort of like there's more condensed people.
It's crossing the train station.
Right.
And
it seems like it's more likely that it would have multiple people use it than seating for 20 people at Maple Hill.
Yeah, I sort of
I kind of think of it that way too. That's why I feel like if I drove by there tomorrow. But you brought up another point too, that because each bench you're talking about, correct me if I'm wrong, is like $3,000. Just the regular bench, right?
Correct. They were
installed probably about $2,500 bucks, $2,000. So that's the concrete pad. The bench is about $900 plus the markup.
Mm-hmm. So that's not cheap. So like you brought up a good point, saying like, well, maybe instead of the 16 or 18, we put one of these elements in there to replace that and try that.
Yeah.
Because we're paying. I mean, to me, $2,500 isn't nothing. It's still a lot for a regular. Ugly bench.
Especially if there's many of them.
Yeah. Well, we couldn't get rid of all of them.
No, in that section.
We could get one or two.
Yeah, one or two.
We could
put one of these in, right?
Exactly. You're right. Exactly right.
So the benches are already part of the approved IDOT plan, so they can't be omitted.
Okay. Oh.
So we're on the hook for what we have already submitted to IDOT.
Okay.
So that whatever number we have is what we're married to, unfortunately, at this point in the IDOT submission process.
God bless the government.
Well, we can take it done with that. So we can take them out later. They just have to sign the final check and then it's ours.
I mean, that's true. We just
move it to another level.
Yeah, there will be. Or you have to have them exactly where you.
They have to be exactly as you presented it to IDOT. So they're going to come out and audit the whole thing. And
there will be
an opportunity to sit on the knee walls at the entrance by Veterans Park. So the way that they've done the landscaping and opening up the plaza there is going to encourage people to sit on those walls.
Well, then to bring people into the whole project. Mm-hmm. Which,
so there will be a little bit of a gathering space there, but I, you know, because I don't know if you would be able to accommodate that in Veterans Park without having to look at some significant tree relocation or removal, just based on the width of that.
Yeah.
It does seem like, though, you know, that is where a lot of people will wait for the train or
sort of like on the road to and from town.
Right.
So they sort of are like more concentrated. But I will say this for everything that I see here. Sculpturally beautiful, fitting for that, what people, I mean, people in the area have told us, oh, don't ruin this beautiful green space. And we heard that. So any notion of exercise equipment just fell by the wayside. So
correct.
Now we're trying to accommodate our original concept, which you had up in the beginning. And if you could flip back to it, what was our objective from the beginning? To kind of provide more reasons for people to get out of their homes. And different generations and different ability levels and different reason to gather. This accomplishes that objective while being unobtrusive. So I think conceptually I do like it, you know, and I think that phasing in makes sense. I don't know the science of collecting data. If we do one and we don't think people use it, well then, I mean, I don't really know how that would work, but I do think phasing these in ultimately would be the only way this is going to work.
Mm-hmm. I think we're going to be pleasantly surprised at how much this is used.
I think you could be right.
Yeah.
I think so too.
You mean the park in general or these elements?
Yeah.
I think as people walk down the trail and they have kids of any age, it's like if you're two people, adults, walking down the trail with their kids and they run ahead and they could do those kind of things and then you catch up to them and then they run ahead and do the other thing. There's something to be said about that as ability to play. Or if you decide to sit down, at least they have something to do when you're sitting down talking. So you'd be surprised how many people, when they're walking on a trail, their kids want to run ahead and do something. And if you don't give them something to do...
You've got to give people something to do and a reason to get out.
Then they go way ahead. Yeah.
Well, near where we live in Oak Park, a woman has taken her front garden and she's had it just steppers. And we watch people walking their kids, exactly what you say happens. The kids run along and jump between the steppers, and the parents just walk.
Mm-hmm. Just keep on going, right? So you give them something active to do
exactly
on that.
Exactly.
Yeah. Across the street, too. Yeah. I wouldn't want my kids crossing the street without me, so if you could delay them at all.
Yeah.
As they're running ahead. Yeah.
Oh, that's also true. Good point.
Just say, you go up, I'll meet you at the steppers, and they could jump around the steppers, and you catch up, and you move on. Yeah, I totally agree with you. So that's one of the advantages of having that. Kind of give them something to do when you're on the trail. So.
Does anyone have any more questions for our guests? Anything else you'd like to discuss? Only because we've got so
got lots to do. So our question is, do you want us to put these items out to bid and just not committing to anything? You just put it out to see what the cost is. They would be addendum, right? Or
an addition.
So we just put it on there to see what it's. Yeah. And then if you don't want them, you take them off. If you decide, wow, they come in really cheap and you want one because whatever reason, you want a fun one or come in lower than budget or whatever, you could say, let's throw this one in and see and phase it in. So what would you like us to do? Would you like us to put it in the bid or just to see all of them? Or would you like us to take out any of them? Or
I would say we should put them
all.
Yeah.
Put
them in. Josh?
I think the deduct alternate, because we can't put in, because they'll go in with the playground bid. They won't go in with the trail through IDOT.
Right,
so
exactly.
So they'll be timed differently than the construction of the trail, so there'll be likely that there'll be some coordination there, but I think a deduct alternate, we can figure that out. I mean, whether we package them in two or individually or whatever, we can figure that out. Let's be honest.
Okay. Perfect. Thank you. I appreciate
thank
you coming
you so
out tonight.
Much.
Thank you.
Good to
see you.
Thank you, guys. Oh,
you always take the cost.
Yeah, absolutely.
So,
yeah.
$20,000
seems like a deal.
Well, you know what? It's
long
like
they set it up.
You set it up like one, 200,000. We're like, what a deal now.
Well done.
We would have 10 of them.
We're so used to everything costing a lot of money.
So it's 52 so. For
everything's ridiculous.
Yeah,
huh? How much?
Where do I get the water?
I'm sorry, Chris, can you say that again? How much is everything?
$52,000 for all everything.
So. Oh, $52,000 for everything.
Yeah,
so who knows if it becomes in cheap, you never know.
Okay.
Yeah. Right? I know, me too, actually.
Yeah, I'm like,
this is one of those things that's cheap, I guess, in retrospect. Okay, so next.
Alrighty.
Because we got a lot to cover.
Yeah.
we're going to go right on.
Thank
you,
Bernie.
Make sure you guys have
thank
a
you.
Lovely. Thank you so much.
Yeah. Right.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you, Bernie.
Okay. All right. Okay. Glencoe Beach water levels, storm damage, and peer discussion.
So, interestingly, I was listening to WGN, like I guess the lady is today, mm-hmm. and they said in January, lake levels were the highest in recorded history. So we're dealing with some of the effects of that high lake level. So I'm going to turn it over to Bobby and Chris and talk a little bit about there was a significant storm that caused damage in January 10th through the 12th, but there's been other ramifications since then. So
obviously, you know, this is our beautiful beach. This photo was taken beginning of August last year at the camp at. So this is when the beach was looking very pretty and looks manicured. This is where the water level was. So each one of these railings is 8 feet long. So if you look at a photo today, we're about 7 of those railings further back where the water is. So we're over 50 feet of shoreline has been eroded since August. Not great. Other than the coronavirus, this is probably like the number two media story in Illinois right now. We've been in discussions with a significant amount.
I won't tell Biden and Sanders you said that.
Yeah.
We have a call in.
So we've actually had a lot of meetings with other districts along the North Shore, with FEMA, as you know, the IEMA.
IDNR.
You name it, we've had discussions over the last month with what people are doing, from operations through to claims, through to Pederma, which we'll discuss in a few minutes. So this was back in 2018. This is a GIS of the beach. This here, this just shows the boundary of the property. This is where the water level was. This is where it is right now, going all the way across. So we're seeing a significant reduction in the amount of usable space on the beach. Clearly, there's going to be operational issues this year. We're still working through what some of those are going to look like. We're still talking to other districts. We're trying to look at our operational plan. How are we going to store boats? How do we make sure we have a swim area that's usable? All those good things. So we're looking for, trying to give you guys an update tonight, but also talk through some of those challenges and what your feelings are on those. So this is what we look like today. This was about 2 weeks ago, just before we met with FEMA. This is all ice. Realistically now, we're probably right at this railing here, which is 7 railings down from where it was, so 56 feet. The asphalt has been completely removed, almost all of it now. This was taken the morning of the storm by myself and Matt were down there. So 8 in the morning, this was what was hitting the pier. And that continued for effectively over 24 hours. And it was the same, you can see the water all the way up here. It was coming up to the wall by the beach house, was on the playground. If you were there on Friday last week, the playground was pretty much underwater. The water feature was flooded. It's really bad, to be brutally honest. So what does the future hold for lake levels? So you can see, last July, this is what the water level was. It was touching it up against the 1986 high. So that was last July, August, when we had that photo in the first slide where the beach camp out. This here in 2020, we've just reached all-time high. This is the projection, this red lines, this range here. Unfortunately, the bottom of that range is still saying we're going to be right on what we were last year. The top of that range is pretty significant. It's like at least 12 to 15 inches. So the green line that hopefully you can see, that's the projection, which is at least 4 inches up on what it was for last year. So that's pretty significant when you look across the beach itself. It's not looking great. We're planning for the worst because we think it is the new normal, and that's what everybody's saying. When we talked to people who were here when we hit that original high water back in 86, they said they never saw that erosion. So the erosion is kind of new. They may not remember it, but the erosion has significantly impacted the beach this time, so that high water erosion effect is pulling all the sand, which is really compounding the high water levels. So that's what we're pretty concerned about. So Chris is actually going to talk about some of the actual structural damage.
So Josh, we're going to run right back to that number you said earlier, that 2.25. So we submitted a claim to Federma, which is our insurance provider. So Federma has covered two other pier damage incidents for us, totaling around $100,000 between the two of them. Previously, the pier itself is considered a piece of infrastructure, which would be typically covered in our claim under our policy. We don't have official notification yet that it is a covered claim. It's something we're working on. They've been out, they've inspected it, we've had adjusters out. So we submitted a claim initially for $250,000. So in that claim, our thought was some type of surfacing. We know that based on the projected water levels that it's likely that the end of the pier will constantly be facing water through wave action if it isn't overtaken completely by the level of the lake. So it's unlikely that we'll be able to put back decking. I mean, because it's just not going to last. We're going to put it there and it's going to be gone in 2 or 3 days. So our thought process right now is looking at some type of a hardscape cap, whether that's concrete. That's really more of an engineering discussion moving forward, which we'll get to. So we've submitted a claim to Federma for the decking, the asphalt, and some repairs to the concrete underlayment as well. So sand loss, this is what Bobby was discussing. So it's around 12,000 cubic yards, so sand is not covered by Federma. So that's excluded from our policy. So that is one of the big numbers that we've submitted to FEMA, and our estimate is somewhere around $1 million is what we asked them for. So we were able to partner with our surrounding park districts and get together a very cost-efficient price estimate based on what other districts are paying. So we didn't want to estimate that sand would cost $65 a cubic ton in Winnetka, but it would be $200 a cubic ton in Glencoe, because we knew that those were going to be red flags for FEMA. So to Bobby's point, I think we pretty much met with everybody that we could conceivably meet with in the last month about this to make sure that we put the best submission forward to the federal government that we possibly could. Mm-hmm. So it's about, I want to say, 18% of our total available recreation space is what we lost. So that's between the swimming beach and the boating beach, is that 12,000 cubic yards. So we're still waiting to hear from FEMA on where that's going to go. I'm sure they have a lot going on right now. So as we know, Governor Pritzker declared a proclamation of disaster in the state of Illinois based on the January 10th and 11th storm. So what that means is that we met the standard for the amount of damage that needs to be take place for the state to declare a disaster, which was $19.6 million. So that's between the city of Chicago, Evanston, all the North Shore Park districts, and then up into Lake County. So the next step for the federal government is with the $36 million?
So I believe it was actually $25 million. It was for Cook County, it was 19.6. I believe for the state it was 25.
25, 26, yeah.
So the next level is the FEMA can look at the entirety of the state together as one claim. So again, we had a very, very strong meeting with them. They were very positive, but ultimately could make no promises at this point. So where we're at right now, we've submitted a claim to Federma. We've submitted a claim with FEMA. We're working with the village, other park districts, the IDNR, Cook County. Lisa and Bobby are an active part of the Illinois Sand Management Group, which is the beneficial reuse project, which is a long-term solution. It's not a short-term solution. So the Army Corps of Engineers has approved a pilot program for Glencoe, Lake Brook, North Chicago, and Evanston, which I know Lisa has spoken to at great length before. So the professional support that we brought on, or that we're recommending bringing on, is Baird, which is the coastal engineering firm that assisted us with the bluff study previously, as well as looking at some of our shore protection. Cam Davis from GEI Consultants, the Delta Institute, IDNR, and their coastal habitat micro restoration grant.
Can you go back to that slide for really one quick, next one please. So Cam Davis at GEI and Delta Institute, those are both working in conjunction with that sand management group. Mm-hmm. They're actually consultants that would be funded through a grant through IDNR. So one is for Cam Davis, is for not only the sand placement, but also micro restorations throughout the area, and Delta Institute will help facilitate that. And also assist with community meetings when we are ready to do that sand placement. So both of those institutes are being funded by, hopefully, we're applying for those grants right now. So that's exciting.
Is there a local match for that?
No, we our match. Well, we don't know yet. We're really early in the process for the micro restoration, but for the grant, actually, IDNR would pay for it all for those two institutes to work with us.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
So is this the same Cam Davis that's running for the Water Reclamation District Board?
Yes, I
believe so. Yeah,
it's the same guy. I know him.
Yeah.
They bring a lot of technical expertise to be able to talk in public meetings.
They bring tons, yeah.
When we started discussing it, we realized we don't have the technical expertise to talk about the engineering behind what we're doing.
Yeah.
So the questions in public meetings, they'll be able to answer a lot of those.
So we brought that up with IDNR and said, you know, we need assistance when we were talking about putting that dredge sand on our beach. We need assistance because, you know, all the scientists, everything, they will bring that expertise and be able to answer all those questions for any concerned citizens. So that was a plus.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
So included in the packet was a proposal from Baird. We're at the point where we don't believe that putting decking back on the pier is a viable solution in the future. We need to study what the potential cost would be for a concrete or some type of a hard cap on the pier. Mm-hmm. In talking with Bayer, they indicated that because there's a little bit of a challenge to it because it's not like a sidewalk. It's also considered a shore fortification, which means that it triggers other steps in the permitting process. So it would be considered a maintenance permit, which would mean that we wouldn't have to go out for public notification or anything like that, like we do where we receive for other neighbors, shore protection. We brought the proposal from Baird because we think that we know that based on our previous experience with them that they're the industry experts and they're going to be able to give us a realistic cost going forward what this type of a cap would be on the pier. So their proposal has been included in the packet. Mm-hmm. It is within Lisa's purchasing authority if there is consensus to go forward on that tonight or if we want to look at other options.
So that's what I would like to recommend is that we sign the contract with Baird to give us valuation of the pier to see what it would cost fixed with every expectation that probably would not occur before we open the beach this summer, if at all, because with the lake levels right now, I don't think we could do any really big fixes. We'd do some temporary ones, you know. But there's even a great possibility that we may have to close off the pier for the summer and not let people go on it. So Chris is also looking at different gates and such so that we don't have to put up like snow fence or, you know, barriers that aren't very attractive. But we want to look at something that's more permanent that would stop people from going on the pier. It won't be like a 7-foot high fence. People would be able to skirt it if they wanted to, but at least we have that visual barrier that says, do not enter. Because we're worried about the water going up onto the pier and causing a safety issue for us. We are very lucky we have that pier. That is what is saving our beach. Without that pier, we would not have a beach. We'd be in the same boat as some of our neighbors down the shore. So that pier right now is saving us. We do not think we have any bluff erosions on our main beach. There might be some on we'll be monitoring that on the other side of the pier. We own a small piece of land on the other side, so we'll have to watch that to see what the ramifications of that bluff is. So
on the other side, meaning on the south side of the
yes,
pier?
Yes, the yeah, south side of the pier. We own a little, it was donated to us at one point, so.
Right.
So we'll have to watch that just to see.
Some other parts
this
of the
area
have
here,
some,
yeah.
Some pretty significant damage where trees start.
Yeah, right where he said there's
yeah,
some.
So this course. Area is
oh, yeah,
the
that's happening all around. Oh,
okay. So we haven't seen anything yet, but we are going to watch that, uh-huh. And if we might have to do some shore, you know.
What can we?
So we talked months ago, I forget, about like the long term, what do we want to do with this beach? And I remember seeing things where I think it was in Lake Forest or someplace else where they kind of built rocks out into it to protect
a great question.
The
yeah.
beach. Is it, if we get 250,000 and we're going to get a million in sand, let's just suppose that we do, I'm not saying we do, is this the time where we start thinking about, wait a second, all we're doing is putting a Band-Aid on a pier that constantly has problems, and I've heard about problems since I started here, and actually, quite frankly, even before that, I was on the board, I've heard about issues with this pier. Is now the time to think about a permanent solution as opposed to temporary? I agree with you, it sounds like the pier did save us, but Do you rip it up and put a bunch of rocks there like other beaches have and do it? May not be the most
delightful
for the city, but...
Yeah. Really quick, what we want to do is preserve the pier because that is saving us. So that's something we're talking about putting a cap on is putting cement so that people can still enjoy that if when the water level goes down, you know, not decking. But keep the pier because it is serving that purpose of a jetty to save. It's the second longest pier in Lake Michigan. So we did have other study back what, 3-4 years ago. Mm-hmm. I've been here 7 years now. And when I started, the lake was at its lowest levels ever.
Yep.
So I remember 3 or 4 years in, we did have some suggestions for some rock, what alcoves would you say?
Yeah.
What are they called, Chris?
It was kind of branching out of the dialogue about what was installed at Rosewood Beach.
Yep. Yes. Yep.
So I think, to your point, one of the challenges is most of our neighboring park districts that have had significant damage have those systems.
Yes.
And
so I was just going to say,
those systems have been defeated.
Oh, they were?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because let me tell you why, Michael. They're all set at a lower lake level, so all the water is just splashing over. They may say that they're keeping a little bit of sand in, but we have had been much more successful with our pier. And then what happens, say if the lake levels go down, and then you have those big jetties that are really sticking up out of the water, is that the kind of, so it's definitely worth a more in-depth discussion. Right now, they're not working.
They're not working, Chris, because of the height? Or is it they're not working?
They don't know.
Okay, so
the engineers don't know.
That surprises me. That
it's
at $300 an hour for senior engineers, I would expect them to know.
Well, they're typically what you're going to find is one firm isn't going to criticize another firm's work openly.
Yeah.
You know, we did get... a little bit of an estimate for something like that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, a project that of that magnitude could probably be well within the $6 to $10 million range.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that to Lisa's point, you know, it does deserve further discussion because if the lake just continues to rise, we may be in the position of saying, what are we going to do to preserve the beach?
Mm-hmm. And that there may be, FEMA has talked about there being other mechanisms too for shore fortification. It's not something that's right now going to happen, but they've said that there is other funds available for some kind of protection. They haven't made it clear what that would look like or how that would work.
Yes, down the road.
The process now is like, here's your insurance claim for what's broken, and then it's developing a grant program to, and there may be value to partnering with other local municipalities and coming to it all together. So
we have been in discussion with Village also on this because they're extremely worried about the water plant and about what has to be done. So if we ever do go down that road to bring a recommendation for moving forward with something like that, we would definitely bring the village in on that discussion and work together on that. And that's definitely something we could look at, but we're really learning a lot from people down up and down the shoreline.
Yeah.
So
you mentioned something interesting where you've got engineers kind of pointing at each other. Please tell me, are we using the engineer? Are the Bear folks the ones that recommended this to Highland Park?
So one of the beaches having a challenge is Highland Park.
Yeah.
Their most southerly cove was a pretty massive space when they built it.
Mm-hmm.
So so they've got three coves. They've got one up.
Sorry, Bobby, I don't even want to see that. The question is that are
he just wants to know if that engineer that did those are doing this.
I want to make sure that we are.
Other, but they're not.
They haven't been unsuccessful so far in Lake Michigan.
So what we're trying to say, that's definitely worth more in-depth conversations, and obviously it's a big investment for the community, but that's not to say that the pier will always be a solution to save our beach, and those would just be additional things to save the boating beach and other parts of the beach, but this pier structurally is doing really well.
Yeah.
I guess visually, it's not, right?
Yep.
So that's what's not doing well. I don't think no other beach looks like ours, except for Wilmette's doing great. But Winneka.
I was down at North Ave Beach 2 weeks ago, and I didn't notice a thing in Chicago.
What do you mean?
I don't notice it was looking any different to me.
It's way different. They actually have taken out a couple beaches.
I noticed some sand was on the sidewalk, but it didn't seem noticeably.
It just so happened that the Microsoft photo that they put on my computer before I log in, was a photo of the Chicago skyline from, you know, like
the 90s,
from Lincoln Park, looking at the Hancock, and the those things that were in the water are like 2.5 feet out of the water. And I'm looking at it, and I'm like, oh, those are all underwater.
Now they're underwater, right? Yeah. So that's what happens. Scary. Yeah, yeah, scary. So
the shore protection that's defeated is underwater. That's why it's been defeated. I mean, it's not like their granite boulders are floating away. They were literally
just underwater
for a lake that's as deep as it is now.
Yeah. Right.
Right.
So there is a mechanism to do that by building even higher ones. That's just a choice if you want to change the beach, the look of the beach. So
I think it totally makes sense to fortify the existing pier with materials that would stand up to having water come over the top of them, such as cement. I don't, personally, I don't think that cement would be terribly unattractive. And it's certainly going to hold up better than decking.
The decking's pretty much done for now.
I go, maybe in the future, if the lake levels go back down and there's a floating deck you want to put over the cement so that it just, you know, so in the 90s.
It was beautiful.
We did a decking a few years ago.
Yeah,
just the end.
We just did that, so now it's totally compromised.
There may be some criticism if we remove the deck. There is people who really like the deck.
And right now, I think we can explain it.
What do you mean the deck? The deck's gone. The deck is gone. We mean the decking.
Yeah. Like the decking. Yeah. I think it could be cement. You know, they stamp it like cobbles. I mean, there's things you can do to make it more aesthetically pleasing than just like a driveway.
Again, that's why we want to hire this company to tell us what the best surface, because they might come back and say, no, you can't do stamped concrete because it does whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's what we want to do. So do we have your permission to kind of go down that road with Beard?
That's the study.
That's the study.
No, I know, but we're talking, so it's...
Not succeed,
yeah.
I can give you the exact
number. No, but I mean, it's 80 hours of work, effectively, at the average.
It's not going to be the principal. It'll be site visits, things like that. And it doesn't include destructive testing. So they won't be drilling holes in our existing pier or smashing up portions of it to look underneath.
Which is a good thing.
Yes, for now. But 80 hours seems like a lot of time, I don't know.
So the $250,000 that you submitted in the claim, do you think that covers their repair?
We won't know until we get that study. I mean, we really can't say.
I will say this, that having the study will give us an ability to push back on the claim. Because if we go to Federma and say, well, we want a certain amount of money because we want to fix it in a way that it's not going to get broken again, they're going to say, well, where did you come up with that number? Mm-hmm. And if I say, well, I just made it up in my office based on unit clients, it's going to be a fight. If we can come back and say, well, we had this engineering consultant in, because they'll give us the value of what we currently have to put towards a new project. Mm-hmm. So we won't really be able to make that push unless we have a solid cost.
Right.
Because they'll give us, you know, the $30,000 or $40,000 or $60,000 for decking again. And then eventually they're going to get to a point where they're going to say, no more claims.
This is it.
Right. Fix it right or you're not getting any more money.
Right.
What about, is there a possibility of going to them and say, look, you can give us $60,000, but you're going to give us $60,000 again next year and the year after that, so how about give us...
No, I asked them for $250,000. That's exactly what we said. We said we want to fix it right.
Yeah.
We know that fixing it right means removing the decking, removing the asphalt, and removing the existing concrete. And most likely having to compact stone that's in the base as is. So that's the number that we submitted to them, was that $250,000 number. And that was, you know, a wag after the storm where we were at that point.
And we might get some from FEMA, so.
Yeah.
But we won't know until we do this.
Right.
And then
they weren't opposed to it, Josh, either.
No, they were not. Yeah.
And then it can't be done for summer, so what would the time frame? Would you be able to start it over the summer, or?
We'd have to see what the conditions are of the lake, to be honest with you.
I mean, they're not going to be able to pour concrete with water washing over it. I mean, there are certain concretes that can dry in the water, but it's going to all depend on what we want to accomplish. Do we want to attempt it in the fall?
Yeah. Right.
Do we want to attempt it in the fall of next year, the spring of next year?
$15,000 is fact-finding.
Yes.
Yes, exactly.
Is there anyone else you reached out to? Is this bid competitive?
It's a professional service, and they're one of the best in the area.
So I would encourage us to always have at least two bids so we can know if everyone else comes in at 7,000 for things like
that. Well, they'll come in at whatever number is below or the number that they've got to compete against. That's the challenge with professional services. Yes. Is really, in coastal engineering, you've got Chabika and you've got Baird. That's who's
Smith.
Yeah.
That's who's doing it on the North Shore. So we looked at Baird because we had a previous relationship with them. They do a ton of work with the federal government, and they're a coastal engineering firm. They're not a retaining wall bluff replacement for a private residence firm. Where some of our other districts have shared with us feedback about how great firms are at like small projects, but this is a firm that has an international presence.
I'm not saying don't choose them.
No, I get it. I hear you.
I'm saying it's maybe worthwhile to just make sure that this is not out of the because I will tell you, and I would be surprised if any of my other board members had a better feeling for whether 15,000 is the right number or not. I can tell you, I don't have any clue, and I've got no context to put it in. So it helps me out to understand where we are. I'm not saying do it for this one, but I do think in the future it helps to understand the marketplace for this.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we can go really to RFP anytime, RFQ anytime the board wants to. I mean, we typically have in the past gone out to RFQ, like with Altima New, the board selected their firm, and then we continue to use that firm for each project. Based on that board selection and the performance of the firm, but I mean, if we need to do that in the future,
and we just did that with Baird, with the next one.
Oh, you just did
that
it with
it's
Baird.
Not to exceed, and that you guys can.
It's not to exceed 15.
It's not to exceed, so it's not that it's going to be 15. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right, not to exceed.
You will, I presume, scrutinize their billing, and if they say we spent 80 hours and you have no evidence of 80
Absolutely.
Hours of work, you're not going to pay for that.
Yes.
As a former professional services person, I'm sympathetic to the argument that people would argue with us all the time about, well, how can it be $100,000? Well, I can do it for 40. It's just I'm going to do 4/10 of the work.
Right, exactly.
And 40,000 will be better than nothing, but it's not going to be what you would get.
My honest thought was that this price was a steal because they want to get in the door because they know there'll be discussions about shore protection in the future. That's my honest opinion.
That's it. He came and he's like, we're getting this for a steal. Based on what other people are being charged.
Thinking this is a park district that might be discussing a $6 million shore project down the road.
Mm-hmm. We're selling our name.
We're selling us for future business because they're looking at it going, they might be doing, fortification in the next 10 years.
I am not an engineer. I have professional services. I have nothing to base whether this is a lot or a little.
So
I'm thinking an average person here is $200, 80 hours of work.
We're typically
paying around what you guys are for. You guys let me know there.
Right, so we feel this is a really good price. We feel it's a steal, so. Yes, Dudley?
The cost of this then, I know it's in the packet, but the cost of this and where the money's coming from, you can make this decision yourself, right?
I can, yeah.
Yeah.
I just wanted to bring to the board to talk about. Less than 25. It's not to exceed 15. So we don't have to take a board action. I just wanted to bring this to the board.
That's what I wanted to stress.
So within my,
In my world, Baird is considered one of the best in the country. Mm-hmm. I think that in order to make informed decisions, we've got to have solid information. And I think also having an experienced firm prepare information for us helps us in getting future grants.
I agree with that.
So those are sort of three reasons.
I agree.
To do.
Okay. Calls or emails have you gotten about the beach?
You know what? Surprisingly, not a huge amount because we're proactive in our communication. So we've been talking to the Lakefront Advisory Committee. Eileen Serkin, we're going to email. She's like, look at the beach. Like last week we had an event that the water was all the way up to the playground again. So we're not getting a ton. But if you go down there, there's quite a few. I go down there almost daily. I walk there. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of people walking down there and looking at it. And we're going to it's going to be a very rocky beach this summer. Just want to make it very clear to that. On Highland Park, they're discussing whether they want to barge in more sand. And I'm here to tell you I'm not recommending we put more sand on because I think we're just going to lose it right away.
Yeah.
And so you're going to spend 50,000. They spent 50,000 last fall, right?
250,000.
Mm-hmm. They retained some of it, but most are gone. So I don't think in this climate, with how high it is, that I would recommend barging in sand right now.
And heavy sand too. So
yeah.
It's actually the sand.
And they said it's retaining a little bit better.
It's
so
better.
You know, we'll work with our usual. Lenny, right?
Yeah, Lenny Hoffman.
Lenny Hoffman, and we'll smooth it all out and stuff, and we'll take a lot of the rocks out. But it'll be a rockier beach than probably normal.
Probably $1,000 worth of flip-flops and let people borrow.
Yeah, exactly. I also want to make it very clear that, you, as staff said, we have, you know, moving on from the recommendation, is that we have lost considerable amount of beach space. So we're already talking internally, and we still have more research to do on this. So I don't have the answer for you today, but this is something so you know that we're checking into, is how much beach space we have. What's our capacity?
Yeah.
Now that Winnetka probably lost a beach, we know Evanston has, Chicago has, Lake Forest has put more strict things about getting down to their beach. We know that there may be more people coming to our beach this summer. So we might get to capacity, and what is that? And how do we make sure our pass holders, like on a weekend, to make sure they can get in? So we're going to figure out through many different means an estimate of how many people we think we can comfortably do down there. So say it's 700, for example. We might say on any given Saturday and Sunday, Friday, because those are usually our busy days, we might say we're only going to let 600 people in, and we're going to save 100 for our pass holders. So we're kind of looking at that. So we're really going to start pushing our passes, saying, hey, if you want to get on our beach, get a pass, because we're going to hold spots for them.
Yeah.
Some people don't do that. I think we should hold 100 spots for our pass holders if that fills up, if we get to capacity at that. But we want to make sure our pass holders have ability. That we're still in compliance with our OSLAC grant, because we sell passes to resident and non-residents.
Right.
We cannot just say no more non-residents. We'd be a violation. But we can do it with passes. So we are going to figure out that. Don't have that number for you yet. We still have to, there's really...
See where the water goes.
We have to see a lot. We have to, we're juggling a lot of balls. We might not know that till April, but we'll keep you informed. But that's another thing we're looking at also.
Per person.
Because we know we lost. Look at how much beach we lost. So we'll be...
Kind
of, so.
Yeah, we'd have to use clickers.
You have to, I mean, if you're going to do that, you have to be really vigilant about.
Yeah.
We'll do that.
Getting people in is very easy to count. So
that's our job. That's our job, and we've already talked about how to to when people leave.
I feel pretty confident.
Yeah.
Well, the point is we're trying to encourage residents to go to the beach, and so pass holders. That whole idea of trying to encourage them to buy passes.
Yeah.
Dovetails with this perfectly.
It does. Yes.
And it's the only thing we can do that isn't. I mean, it's the only reasonable thing we can do. Encourage our residents to buy passes.
Yep.
They'd be the most likely to.
Can you buy
to.
The passes online?
You can renew them online.
You cannot buy them online.
You can buy them online as long as you had a pass before. So you have to have a house.
Perfect.
Yeah.
That's what I was hoping for.
Yeah.
Although I would almost argue for you should force people to come in.
Stephanie?
So I was just going to say that we know that this is going to be one of those PR things that we're going to have to just, like, the more communication, the better, because people are going to complain, people are going to say, and so, you know, I know that you guys do a really great job of communicating, but again, it's one of those things that people aren't paying attention until they're there, I feel like, so the more we talk about it, the more we write about it, send emails.
We already talked that. We're going to work out. We're going to bring a committee. We're going to.
I agree. For this, I think over
the anchor.
I think if you saw our committee packet, we're going to bring a communication plan for this beach issue.
We have one for passes and we'll have.
And for the beaches. So we'll be bringing that to staff. So
people already sent, like, they sent having photos, like, have you seen the beach? Just no. I mean, like,
yeah.
Of course, I liked your response. It was very good.
What did I say to him?
Response to the email of the pictures of the beach.
Oh, yeah. What was my response?
It's been a tough winter.
Oh, that's right.
It's been perfect.
We've already been putting it on social media. We are.
And maybe we can, you know, in a nice way say that, too. Just keep saying this is a problem we're on top of it.
Yeah.
People don't understand, like, how much work you put into the management of this and how on top of it you are. And
And that'll be part of your job, because people sometimes will read it, sometimes being told by,
so. Beach cleanup, we're all welcome to come May 2nd, show the community, we're going to get the sustainability committee, Rotary said they're going to help,
Yeah,
both things going to help.
Second.
Do you want
community? Yep.
Do you want little kids involved too, or no?
We'll get yes,
the
community.
Involved. Yep. So we're working on a plan with that.
My people taking rocks up.
Is it time to drive that tractor or what?
All right. Any other questions on that?
Can I bring the Wrangler down there?
Okay. Can I take notes? You ready to move on?
Oh,
I'm just adding that tonight.
Okay. We'll send an email invite. Can you remind me?
For the visa?
Yep. Yeah. Okay. Or have Jenny send it out to the board. That'd be great. Okay.
All righty. So moving on to coronavirus and the Park District protocol discussion. Lisa.
Okay, so, wow, this is all over the news, right? And yeah. And we had a great meeting with the Village of Glencoe, School District 35, the library, family services today, and the public safety was on the phone with Chicago and the mayor, and they kind of gave some really interesting facts on that Chicago call, and I just wanted to tell all of you. So, you know, there's not a lot of community transmission going on in Chicago right now. That could change at any time. Washington seems to be the highest concentration. That's because it's hitting in their, assisted living quarters. Like, and so the most vulnerable, they said, are, they consider anybody 60 and up and who has a compromised immune system. That it does not appear to be affecting children as much. They were very adamant about that. They said that they're, for some reason, have been able to, it just, they may have a little cold, looks like a cold, and they just bounce right back. It's if for some reason children are not being affected, which is very good for our application. So 80% is mild, 1-2% mortality. They said not to hold them to that figure. That kids are not transmitting it to each other. So that was interesting facts. And that at this point, they're not canceling any public events in Chicago. So that's important to note also.
Chicago? Summarizing?
Chicago.
The
city of Chicago. Kind of, they did a call with that. The emergency declaration, the Chicago is not planning on doing it. Illinois did, but that's more because they wanted to get in line for federal funding. Mm-hmm. Okay, so Chicago does not plan it because they don't want to worry people by doing that. They said it's really people, it's transmitted by droplets, so it's not air. So really, airplane travel is totally fine. It's more like when you touch something and it lives on a surface, they only say about 2 to 12 hours. Okay. We talked a little bit about the Village of Glencoe's, what happened to them last week. So they had a staff member who was on vacation with their wife out of the country. The staff member's wife came in contact with someone with COVID-19. As soon as they find out that he called work, didn't go into work, and told them, my wife was exposed and therefore I guess I was exposed, so they immediately quarantined that individual. The individual had no contact with the park district, was really no contact downtown, no contact to the school district, was pretty much had a few contacts with a few people in Village Hall, but not much. So whatever job this person did was not out in the public. So that person self-quarantined based on their doctor's advice, and the wife was tested, no virus in her. That employee looks like he'll come back to work Friday, totally clear after the 14 days being cleared. So they acted on this side of precaution for that. There's been rumors circulating a lot from all the way to the point where we had 3 kids infected. Some college professor said that. To someone in Highland Park saying that all the water plant employees were affected. None of that is true. So we are working very closely with the village and the school district. What the school district plans to do, and us also, is that the IDPH, if they cancel, if they tell them to close down, they will definitely close down schools.
IDPH again?
Illinois Department of Public Health. So that's the leading, and CDC, those are the leading organizations, and we're all taking their lead from that. Or if there's someone who is sick in our programs, then obviously that would probably cause IDPH to close us down. And so what we're doing on our end is that we are adding about 8 to 10 more man hours on cleaning our surfaces. So every morning from 7 to 8, a parks team, more than our usual custodians, come in and do surface cleaning. So that's handrails and light switches and basketballs and things that kids touch. We've put hand sanitizer out at locations throughout the building, and then kids are in our children's circle and kids club are regularly washing their hands, and more high profile washing hands, including staff. They're asked to wipe down surfaces and stuff like that throughout the day. That's the best way to prevent this, is by covering your mouth, using tissues, coughing air, not shaking hands, and washing your hands. Okay. So. Yeah.
I've only been on a plane 4 times this week, but they all have filters.
Again, planes aren't anymore. They're probably safer than this building, is what we're trying to say. So what I'm saying is that we're watching the situation very carefully. So what we really need board input for is that this is a little bit unusual. I actually have, and did I bring my other folder? I did not, for some reason. We've come up with our procedures on what to do in case something like this happens, and we have it broken down to different phases. So phase one is exactly what we're doing now, which is more cleaning, more washing hands, more public information out how to prevent it. Phase two might go into, you know, maybe facility closures or program closure cancellations. Maybe we'll say we're not going to do a large-scale special event. So looking at what kind of programs have large... Hey, thanks. This is not the one, though.
That's the one you sent out this morning.
Yeah, this is your changes, so I have it someplace.
So I'm just saying it gives you
yeah.
stuff up.
So level two is their moderate... In the event an official source declares a pandemic throughout it. So we have those stages, what we'll do, the work adjustments and things like that. So is there staff that can work from home? Is there staff that can't work from home? Things like that. And then level three is a much higher level, which is a temporary closure of our facilities. So what we want to talk to the board about is, if we end up having to do a closure, and this is our current procedures and policies, is if there's say a blizzard, or we had to close because of extreme weather condition, cold. In the past, we have not paid for paid staff if we were having them stay home for a blizzard, but that was a very short duration. That's 1 or 2 days. If we're required to close from IDPH, that would probably be a closure of 2 weeks to a month. We have no idea what that means. So that means, to be honest, I'm not worried with our full-time salary staff. They'll have the ability to work from home. They'll get paid. If they're off and they're not working from home, they'll make up those hours because they still have to get their job done. It's the hourly employee that we pay pretty much in Children's Circle, Kids Club, our parks staff that are hourly, general program instructors that all of a sudden do not have sick time and will be off a tremendous amount of time and not have any income coming in.
And you know the next question is?
Yeah, how much income?
Okay, so
a week.
Let me finish. Finish my thing. So there's a couple things you have to think about. It's not just money is always important, obviously. That's not the only ramification, is how much the actual cost will be. It's also the long-term effects of not doing something. So let me, so one of those things, and because there's no reporters, is that if you close and you don't pay them, would a union come in? Because now the staff don't feel valued and they're not being paid, and a union can come in and say, I can protect you from this in the future. Once we're closed for 2 or 3 weeks, and then all of a sudden we open up Children's Circle again and have to open up with all of our staff, what if 35, 40, 45, 50% say, screw it, this is too volatile, I'm going to go work for whatever, and leave us, and we don't have the staff to open back up. We don't have the trained staff, because remember, we're a DCF licensed facility, and we have to have trained staff in those doors. So if we don't have them when we open back up, what are the long-term ramifications as far as providing the service and be able to do our program? So those are some of the things about. So Carol, I'm going to throw to you what the money...
So based on this payroll, we have a payroll on Friday, there's approximately, for hourly staff, part-time and full-time hourly, we pay probably $82,000 plus this payroll. So about $40,000-$41,000 a week is what we're looking at for staff. And now that includes all hourly staff.
So there is a possibility, for example...
Sorry, so what's the breakout of full-time versus part-time?
Well, the full-time are the full-time daycare teachers and the full-time maintenance staff. We have 35 full-time staff. I'd say probably 19 are salary, and then the rest are hourly staff, primarily daycare. And
does anything get covered by insurance when it's a pandemic?
So that's the next question. If IDPH closes us or someone is sick, mm-hmm. then we would get reimbursement for lost revenue.
It has to be
both. But it has to be?
Right, the current revenue goes to pay those expenses.
Right.
So lost revenue is effectively.
But it has to be, isn't it both?
You have to have both.
So it has to be IDPH and someone sick to get that insurance to kick in. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to.
One individual and
IDPH. So for example, I'm going to give for instance, if District 35 closed because they had a child in their facility that was sick, mm-hmm. and IDPH closed them down, and we don't close down, mm-hmm. how does that look in the community? Mm-hmm. So if we decide because the school is closing down and all those kids obviously are interacting with our kids and we don't close down, how does that look? Yeah. So it doesn't always coordinate.
Right.
If we're the first one to close, we're fine.
If I have a quick registration,
if you find them for who closes.
If the student's in 35, odds are good that they're in our program.
Not necessarily.
I mean,
not 100%. Not 100% of the kids are in that program. So
if they are, like if they go to a class here, yeah.
then we're covered.
So Lisa,
yeah, but it could be a sibling or a.
Yeah, I'm gonna throw my two cents in here because we're in this exact boat right now in my company. I, for the reasons of confidentiality, I will not tell you exactly what we're doing, but we are taking a long view on this, and the long view on it is. Is who do you want to work for when things are bad and who you want to work for when things are good. But that being said, I don't think that there's there's a time aspect to this. And so what I would feel more comfortable doing is I think that we have to think about these plans now. We have to think about it, and Stephanie, while we can hope for the best with having someone sick and having IDPH do it, we have to probably plan for the worst. Which
right.
is
no, totally.
I totally agree.
I just wanted to know what insurance costs. There's no way I would say not to pay people. I mean,
well,
it's not the problem.
But I would put a time limit on it because I think there's you can't pay people for 2 months, I think is.
Yeah.
And so I think we need to think about as a board, at what point, how much do we want to put into this? And I think that's the ultimate question because you don't want to have it into perpetuity. I'm not saying that people will be out of work for 6 months, but I think in a world where you're saying, hey, we're going to pay you while you're sick, while we're closed down, and if we're closed down for 6 months, which again, I do not think is a likely scenario,
mm-hmm.
but to plan for the worst, like I would probably think about some, for the X days we're going to do this and.
So what is that? What is everybody's tolerance?
That's my thought. I don't know what the board members think, but I think you have to do at least 2 weeks, maybe 4, 6. I don't know.
I think that if you're closed, that they should get paid. It's not their fault we're closed. If they're sick and that's a totally situation, not in this kind of environment, it's a totally different situation. But it's not their fault if the building's closed. I don't see how you can. Not pay them. I mean, I'm very fortunate. I'm in a job where I work from home. I don't need to be there. They have to be here to do their job.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not their fault they can't be here. I mean, hopefully insurance covers some of it, but I just don't see the choice.
I think it's easy to conclude that if you believe that any closure is likely to be very temporary, right? If it's a day or a week or a couple of weeks. But let's take it to an extreme. Let's say that we have to close for a year,
I think it's probably going to be 2 weeks. I think we should.
Well, I don't know.
So
but you have.
It's going to happen.
But you.
Like at what point does your tolerance run out?
And right.
Like,
well, it has.
You
to
plan for the worst. You hope for the best. And
oh yeah,
middle
I totally agree. If it's a year, well,
I mean,
it's much better problem.
We've got a lot more problems.
We have huge problems.
I think if it's 2 months, you have real problems because if you don't have the revenue coming in.
Right.
You have this hefty
well,
expense, and I do want to be a.
Question. We already have the revenue, but.
I mean, mm-hmm. well.
Not necessarily.
The chargebacks happen.
Yeah.
All. I can
well,
tell you
the
right now,
the,
Stephanie. Right. I can tell you right now, the chargebacks that are going on in the travel industry are unprecedented.
Mm-hmm.
And a chargeback is when you call up and say, "Hey,
yes,
hey Visa."
I have two businesses, unfortunately.
And
so
who's
I
on the hook for that
yep.
is. The park district,
yep.
right? By taking the credit cards, you're on the hook for that. So we have to, my hearts go out to all these folks. We're in this exact same scenario. I think 2, 4, 6 weeks is without, it's sort of not a question. I think after that, you have to think to yourself, what's our tolerance?
Well, I was thinking 4 weeks is our max tolerance, in my opinion, because if it's, longer than that, there's way bigger
yeah.
problems.
Yeah.
People want to get open because these parents rely on us to work.
Sure.
So there's a whole different problem if, mm-hmm. if we have to close for longer than that.
But all of this is a moving target. None of us have any clue. We can fantasize what's going to happen. So we know we're all comfortable. We're floating around, obviously, 14 days or, you know, stretching out to work. Couldn't this be something where it gets reassessed?
Well, that's
so like if there's so 3 days or 5 more days.
Absolutely. What I would recommend for the board to do, because we need to be able to tell the staff, and because what's going to happen is this is all going to go really fast.
Yep. Yes.
So that's another thing.
Yeah, that's
what's going to happen is that I may not have time
yeah.
to even call all
yeah.
of you.
Yeah.
I might only have time to call Lisa
yeah.
and say, we have a kid that came down with this.
Uh-huh.
Can you call the board? And you have to trust that I have to go with whatever the village and the school districts are. But I want to be able to tell staff up front because they're nervous right now.
Mm-hmm.
What's going to happen? I can't. They're thinking, how am I going to feed whoever?
Yeah.
And
right,
they're nervous.
Of course.
I would like to say, if we close, we will definitely pay you for 2 weeks. After the first week, we'll assess and see how it's going. Because most people, if you look on the news, they're closing for 2 weeks max,
yeah.
right now.
Yeah.
And then we could reassess as it goes along. But I think if we say we're going to pay you for 2 weeks, and then we're going to reassess,
mm-hmm.
I think, correct me if I'm wrong, people would feel much more comfortable.
Absolutely.
Right now, they're very nervous right now because
That's
they
right.
see what's happening.
That's right.
It's about fear, not about.
It's about fear,
Lisa. It's not a matter of if; it is a matter of when.
Mm-hmm.
Someone in this building,
mm-hmm.
a teacher or a student, will be in contact with someone with this virus.
I'm sure someone already has.
So it is not. It is not an.
Yeah.
It's not an if; it's a
yeah.
when.
Right.
And I think the question here is, and I think for us to think about is, how comfortable do you feel with spending $250,000, which is 80 grand, right? Or 80 grand times 4 weeks is 320, up to, $480,000.
It's 40 a week.
It's
40
a week.
Sorry.
It's 40 a week.
Yeah.
Okay. Yes.
Yeah.
40 a week. How comfortable do you feel spending X a week times X many weeks on that? And then reassessing.
But
right.
This is really a question for Carol.
Mm-hmm.
And I happen to have the budget right here in front of me, but you'll know the answer. Like, we always have operated with reserves, right?
Mm-hmm, absolutely.
So if we spent $160,000 on people who didn't show up for work, we obviously have that cash,
yes,
right? So we're not in danger of like being insolvent
no.
if we
and that's,
do that.
And that's why we
right.
have the
right.
50%.
Right.
And
right.
And in our case, you're absolutely right. We have the ability, and we usually use that money to transfer to Fund 69. You know,
right.
In the second draft of the budget, which is all in front of you, that will be at next week's meeting. It looks better even than when our first draft was. So.
Mm-hmm.
But we have to be careful because once a kid is sick here. People stop registering for
care.
Well,
this is
right.
We're going where I'm going.
Yeah,
right.
It's not just oh, we have to pay. I mean, because really, if you're paying for people who are not here, you're not paying for what you weren't going to pay for anyway. Right? You were going to spend that money, they were going to come to work.
Right, exactly.
The real question is, well, now you're losing the revenue.
Yeah, which is $40,000 a week.
Yeah.
Right. So there was ramifications, and there's also ramifications if we have registration tomorrow and people are really nervous and they're not signing up for as many programs.
Well, one of the questions they're going to have is now, what if camp closes down for 3 weeks? Yeah. Do I get my money back?
Yeah. So what our recommendation is if we do not hold the program, if we choose, if we're closed down, yes. We would refund that money for those classes missed. We would put a hold on membership, fitness center memberships, right, until we open back up, and that would extend their contract 2 or 3 more weeks. So if they're registered in children's circle and we don't open for 2 weeks, they would get refunded for that 2 weeks.
Right.
Right. If they choose not to come, if they, that's pretty much what we do when we cancel programs. Yes. What we're not doing is, for example, someone called yesterday and said, I don't want to go to the fitness center anymore, and I want you to put my membership on hold. We said, you know, unless you produce a doctor's note that says you're not able, there's a medical reason you can't come to the fitness center, we're not putting it on hold. So just because out of fear, we're not refunding.
Right.
If they choose to do that, and they follow our same refund policies right now, but if we cancel, that's a totally different story. So what may happen is that people may wait to register, because they were following that policy, and they might say, oh, I'm just too nervous. What if I don't feel like I'm comfortable sending my child? So that might be a long-term or short-term effect. We're hoping, we anticipate, and it's just a guess, is that people go on spring break, and we'll probably they're going to come back, and then maybe something will happen. It could happen next week, because, you know, there's been cases reported already in this area. It could come where we're just so much ahead of it because we've heard about what's happening around the country that we're more into hygiene, that it'll go faster, it won't be as severe here as it may be in other countries. We don't know, and maybe we're just healthier. You know, maybe in China they had all the deaths because they're not as 50% of their population smokes. We don't know.
It's all speculative,
right? So but what we need to know is, like, okay, so we'll say, you know, we're going to pay our staff we're going to pay you for this time off, and we're going to recess, and then come back 2 weeks later, and you know.
Would it be fair to say a more accurate kind of worst case scenario? Then we have to pay people for 4 weeks is, assume we're going to pay people as we normally do, but we don't have any revenue for 4 weeks.
Correct.
Weeks.
Yeah. Right. Yes, that would be the way to say it.
Financial impact of that.
Yes.
So when we looked at it, the ones that are really going to be impacted are Kids Club and Children's Circle and one-day programs. Mm-hmm. So Children's Circle alone is $125,000 a month in revenue. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So between Kids Club, Circle, and one-day programs over the next month, it's $40,000 a week. When we look at enrichments, you could, in theory, push those back a week or two and trail that extra week, or do some additional makeups, things like that. We're not as concerned, and they're all also contractual programs for a lot of them.
Yeah.
So that's the fitness center is a concern too. It's not as much as those other programs. Camps, if the school year gets pushed back, that could impact us significantly for camp, which is probably a 50.
But they are really looking into e-learning days, and originally they said you can only have 5 e-learning days. Mm-hmm. They are going for emergency to extend that. So there's very possibility that they'll do the e-learning days as opposed to.
And you'll see we can also push back a little bit, so that revenue could be still maintained. But if you start looking at a closure of more than 3 weeks, then we're going to have some additional.
But if
losses.
I guess the question is, if you close, I need a month. If you close for 1 month, we have $160,000 in salary.
No, that's that's an hourly only.
Hourly only.
Salary is another 55.
So let's call it.
But we're paying
that's
that.
Separate. That's
paying that anyway.
You've got $160,000, and the revenue that you lose is how much?
It's going to be over $200,000.
Okay, so the economic cost here is $360,000.
Yeah,
I don't follow that.
Mm-hmm. Because
you're going to pay these people anyway, so the economic cost is just the revenue that you lose.
No, because you don't have to pay these people.
Well, if they were here,
you'd
be paying.
Right, but if you're here, you'd have the revenue. Mm-hmm. So
yeah.
you're not getting 225 grand.
Because you'd be paying that anyway.
You're paying sailors anyways.
It's
the hourly.
Because you'd have to pay them anyway.
What if you have an employee? I mean, I'm sure you've told your employees if they're sick, please don't come to work, and we'll give you sick days.
Yeah. So that was the next question. Right now we've told them that no one, and we say if you have any signs of or any contact with anybody with the coronavirus, please notify us. Yeah. So we haven't said anything like whether you have sick days, we'll take care of it. Yeah. But to tell you, if someone came to me and said my mom was exposed and they were a part-time, I would have said stay home, I'll pay you.
Yeah, that's what we have.
Right? But no one, correct me if I'm wrong, Bobby, no one has said that, right?
I mean, you don't want people scared that they have to come here. And you also don't want people to take advantage.
Well, that's the other. That's why we haven't put that out saying we'll pay you if you're associated, because we want to make sure we don't want people taking advantage of us either.
But at some point they have to document that it's actually
they would have to document. They would have to show us that if they're the first one to go,
that they are in contact with, has to show that they've actually
Because
it isn't just a child gets sick; it's a child's mother got exposed at work to somebody who was in contact with somebody.
They're actually showing that degree is not, you don't have to close for the whole thing. So they're showing that now that there's only a certain degree of separation.
Yeah, so
the mom's boss's friend does not mean that the child has to be out teacher has to be out type thing.
Right.
So. But we are conscious of that too. So
let's get to the question at hand.
Right.
Go back to this. My personal stake on this is in the long term, a good employer goes far.
Mm-hmm.
I've always been a fan of giving the access to the gym for the full-time, even the part-time. I like the idea of giving them access to the beach, the full-time, part-time. Little things like that go far. This is a big thing that will go further. I personally think that saying 2 to 4 weeks, I feel comfortable with that. But I don't know what everyone else feels.
Josh?
I mean, I'm definitely a two-weeker. I think I can easily be convinced to go higher.
Yeah, I'm fine with 2 to 4 weeks.
Yeah. Lisa?
Yeah, 2 to 4 weeks seems reasonable.
I wouldn't tell people 2 to 4.
I'm not going to say anything. Yeah. Right. I'm going to say
two.
If we close, we'll pay you for 2 weeks and we'll readjust after that.
We'll reassess. Reassess.
2 weeks and readjust.
Yeah, the CDC shuts you down again, I think.
Shut down. But I know internally you guys would go 4 weeks before we really have to. Because if we're all confined, we can't really meet.
We don't know.
Okay.
We can email.
We can talk on the phone a lot. For salaried, like all managers, we all have the ability to work from home.
Which
managers would be the department heads, myself, mm-hmm. the program managers, Bill and Anthony.
Yeah.
Those are the ones who have the capacity to work at home and actually get things done.
Yeah.
You know, Carol or Liz would have to actually physically come in the building to do payroll and things like that, but that's fine because they won't be in contact with anybody, so they would be able to do that. Only after the threat was done. So if we're closed, we're closed, and then right before they can't either. So right before we open, they would come. You know, probably if we're closed for 2 weeks, they'd probably come back in a week and a half if they're fine. Yeah. So they would stay out too. Yeah.
Right. So then if they're carrying it, they'd bring it back.
They'd bring it back. Yep. So you keep them off. But it dies on surfaces within 12 hours, so everybody knows.
I will say that we discussed, not here on the board, but one of the most interesting the interesting letters that were received with every company and every camp and everybody sending out letters.
Uh-huh.
And I'll tell you the one that I think was the most well received by people I've heard was Kohl's Children's Museum. Have you got anyone on the Kohl's?
No.
I didn't get that one.
So they said that we are not changing our cleaning policy because every day is flu day here.
Which it should be.
And it was a really interesting take on it.
Flu day.
So I thought it was pretty interesting perspective.
Well, you think,
by the way, they probably are changing it, right? but they're saying every day is flu day here, and these are the precautions that we take. And so I think
Because I think they should, because it's very hands-on.
They got sick.
Oh, of course. I never took my, but again, it always got sick.
And now they're going there now.
But perception is that, you know.
My kids always.
So one thing we are changing, for example, we always have a lot of spring break trips, and we were talking today is that, you know, we used to go to Nickel City and Bay Bay. So
yeah, exactly.
We're actually going to tell parents that we're going to stay in our facility, yes. Do fun things there, and they can have a refund if they choose to, because.
No, they'll be thrilled.
I wonder if there'll be more kids because families are choosing not to go on vacation.
Go on vacation, everybody.
Oh, except that we should.
Michael, I'm not canceling my trip, so I'm going for like 3-day weekend. I'm still going.
Go wherever.
On United, too, so.
Go.
Even if my mom's chemo
down. You know, we're looking at it.
Really?
I can't believe it. I made her want to die.
Because they don't mind flying, they just don't want to connect to somebody.
So
people are asking us, can you walk the middle seat? We can't do it, technically.
That's been a fun history. I know there's a lot.
All right. Any other questions on this one?
But that's the thing, too. In general, we should be following that anyway. In general,
I agree.
I've always wiped down my plane. I always wiped down my seat.
This is kind of common sense that people aren't doing.
I think it's going to be a little paradigm shift in the way we look
at it.
When I had to write the coronavirus communication to my company, I was looking at some data from Japan. It showed that relative to the last 5 years, cases of influenza are down 25 to 75% this year.
Because of this?
Because people are washing their hands like maniacs.
Yeah.
Right.
Right, as they should be.
I went to a restaurant that had the bathroom over here, and then the sinks were here with a window onto the...
Oh, clever.
Onto the... where people dined. And I thought that was the best way to publicly shame people.
Oh, you know? My God.
So I decided if I own a restaurant like Larry David, I'm going to design it where you wash your hands in front of
everybody.
I thought that would
end up monitoring.
As far as if there are any closures, does the board want me to call each board member to say, this is what I'm doing, or would you like me to just call President Brooks and she disseminates the information? What would you prefer? Because when it happens, it's going to be very fast, and probably at 3:30 in the morning. We have no doubt.
Yeah.
Please text them.
Okay.
If you want to know.
Yes.
I can send out a text, and if you want to talk to me, then you just call me.
I don't think at 3, look, you guys are paid to do this.
I don't even know.
But I do not, I think an email is sufficient. I don't really want a text, but you guys are paid to run this program, and I have full faith in you. I love the fact that you're asking us these questions, because quite frankly, I don't think you even... need to ask us these questions. But I appreciate you always coming to us. Do what you guys have to do.
Anything else on this one?
What?
I got directions.
Okay.
Dudley, do you have any other one on this one?
The other question I have, for regular sick time, would they burn through that first?
Well, that's a great question, because if you're giving it to everybody else, I don't know how you can make sick time people use theirs.
Yeah.
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 This is a special.
Yes.
Yeah.
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 Yes, very much. Right.
And unfortunate.
Okay.
Yes.
If there's nothing else on this, we will move on to the Linden House update.
Okay. So Linden House, we sent out a request for proposal for realtors. We purposely left the board out of this whole process, and actually I was left out of this whole process because of anybody who really had any relationship to any realtor. We kind of kept you out of the loop on this one. So we sent out a request for proposal. Jenny actually called up every realtor and said, we have this proposal coming out, who should we send it to? If they responded, then we send it to that person. So we weren't picking out someone we knew. She just called and said, and I don't know how the receptionist passed it on, but that's what we did. So we sent out a request proposal, and then we did an open house to show the house to anybody who was interested. We only had two realtors take us up on the offer. Both realtors submitted a proposal. I was not on the evaluation team, so we chose Matt was, and that's why he's here. We have Jenny Runkel, the administrative assistant, Liz in the finance, and then Bobby and I, but we did not talk about the realtors at all, just to make sure that the request proposal was correct and everything like that. So I'm going to throw it over to Matt to talk about the process and where we're going from here.
So after that last conversation, I feel like I should be offered hand sanitizer.
Okay, right.
So Jenny and I had the opportunity to sit down with both brokers that were interested in, and did submit the RFPs for 233. There were four criteria that we were basing our recommendation off. 40% is going to be off of price and commission, 25% for sales history, 25% for marketing efforts, and then 10% is the office, which is located here at Drug Co. Three of those criteria, there's 60% of it, so the 10% Glen Code, the marketing efforts, and the
sales history,
thank you. We're apples to apples. Their competitive market analysis, we're both great. Their marketing materials, excellent. It came down to price. There was a recommendation between $375,000 to $425,000. So quite a discrepancy in there. They both presented their cases to why they thought the numbers were accurate, and we feel that given the new lot dimensions that we were able to get, we now have a 90-foot wide lot as opposed to a lot of these comps that were selling in the 370 to 380, 390 range, were at 50 or 60. I think one of them was a 75 feet. We've got a unique situation where somebody can look to build a house that's got a two-car attached garage facing Linden Avenue. These comps don't have that. So we've got a unique situation. So it came down to the commission. And we're recommending that we go with Jessica Rosine with Compass Realty at $425,000 for a 3.5% commission.
Is everybody okay with that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Great. So what I need is the authority to negotiate when we put it on the market. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you've all sold houses, and sometimes you have to negotiate back and forth. Permission for that I work with, and we'll probably put Matt on this, and he probably be doing the negotiations on me, and because he has a little bit of history, you don't know of his background, but he's very good at this.
Okay.
And then any final sale would have to come to the board for approval. Our thought is, and once we talk to the realtor a little bit more, is that we won't just take the first offer. We might put it out there and say, we're going to take offers until this date to give opportunity for the best price possible. So
a due diligence period, would say 14 days or whatever we agree upon, for there to be interest for the marketing to get put together and actually put it out there into the market.
Mm-hmm. Is there a contract timeline with Jessica?
Is there a contract timeline? We can set that. So I mean, typically we book at 90 days.
Yeah. I know 90 days is typical. To me, someone that comes in at, 15% over the other person, is that 425 versus 375, 50,000?
Is that 15%? Carol, I can't do math on that.
I think it's about 15% higher. Makes me nervous that they kind of put in a higher number.
Actually, she put the lower number in.
She put the lower one in.
We actually put it up, and she came in at the 3.5.
Think the same way, but...
Okay.
Yeah. She came in at the 3.5 at a lower number.
Yeah.
We think it should be priced higher, so that's what we said. Would you price it higher?
I'd pressure her with the 30-day if you can.
Oh, I don't know.
No.
They don't like to do that.
No.
I think realtors put up numbers in there, and they never, and you've got 3 months that you're tied with them.
I think we put the number out there, not her.
Yeah.
So,
Jessica's initial recommendation was 375 to 399.
Yeah.
I personally am talking about
it. And she might end up being right.
Yeah.
But
we thought it would be a little bit higher than that. We thought more in the 450 range. Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's not with the competitive market analysis that really shed light on where they're coming with their prices. I think that there are big builder networks out there that are going to be willing to pay for this lot.
I think that's what they're looking at.
It was Jeffrey's on the park.
Jenny's on the park.
Yes, Jenny's on the park.
How'd you get such a low commission? That's pretty low.
Yeah.
That's what she put on there. So sometimes you do those proposals. And she said because we're a community organization.
Yeah.
That's why she was coming in.
I mean, the environment is not fabulous.
It's not a fabulous time.
What's standard commission here in Illinois?
For this right now?
Five to six.
And you'll find out.
She's making 1% on that?
That's true, but...
Right? She's going to get the seller 2.5%?
We have a feeling that a builder is going to buy it, actually, and tear it down, so I think it might be a favorable market right now. So.
Okay.
So are we good to move on that one?
You guys feel good?
We'll be happy to be done with it. Okay.
Any other questions?
No, but thank you. Good luck.
He's done a great job.
So thank you. When's it going to be listed?
Like other duties as assigned.
As soon as we can come up with a true listing agreement, we wanted to get the board's input to make sure that we were all on the same page price-wise.
Yeah.
As soon as we get a regular listing agreement, all the disclosures and everything signed, we'll be ready to go to market. We'll start working on marketing materials, putting together the broker open houses. And then open houses for that matter, as soon as we've got a signed contract.
Okay. We get that tonight, then?
What we'll probably do is ask Chris to mark out the lot to show how big the lot is, because
that also would be helpful.
We'll have to get some feedback on landscape removal as well from her, what she thinks would be.
We'll see. That lot's so valuable. It's surrounded by three sides. Okay. So next committee.
So we are moving on to
list of committee
the
topics.
List of committee meeting topics for the next 6 months.
So, just so the board knew the direction we were going in and a list of things that we have to talk about over the next 6 months and the importance of all those objects, we kind of laid out what our committee topics will be for the next 6 months. Obviously open to any board feedback if they would like to add anything for discussion, change things, move things around. Obviously things come up, viruses and as such, to add it in there, but this is kind of the roadmap we have for the next 6 months to talk about different things. You can always also...
probably not going to get to the strategic plans next.
That would be my guess, based on our discussion. So we'll just move it back. So that sometimes happens when things happen.
So this is an evolving document.
It's a living document.
Will you have it available to us so we can just some kind of like touch base? I like to look forward to look at months coming up coming up.
Absolutely.
So
I can put it in my
packet. I have to remember it's in this and where to find it.
I can put it in my packet every month if you want.
Good.
Okay. And like Dudley said, next one was we're going to talk about strategic plan, KPIs, but obviously that's a discussion that we can table until your fresher minds, because we want you. But obviously, keep on looking at that document, suggesting any changes. We did make changes based on last month's discussion, so we'll put that on for next week. So the other business is in reference to the email I sent earlier, and I again apologize for last minute. I've been hounding them to give me that information sooner rather than later, and of course I got it at the 10th hour, and then I got an update at the 10th hour, which I shared with you. So again, this is a request that they made to me to bring to the board. I have no feelings either way. This is really a board decision, so it's really up to you to decide which direction you would like to go on that, and I believe you all know what I'm talking about. So it's on the packet. I sent two emails today.
Look at your most recent emails.
I mean, I can talk about it if you want to.
Over there. It's
going to be bad, yeah. I mean, I trust you guys to know you said in the email that you have seen the bank account statement. So you've seen the amount in the account.
I saw the amount in the account. I wouldn't take that just that... just take it as a bank account. The minimum I would do is to have them put in that, put it into that account that says
that's
escrow, and that they have to pass a resolution and say it would only be used for this amount, and that they would have to show us proof every month of what's coming out of the account. That's a minimum. If you don't have them do the escrow for that, the more official escrow, the minimum I would do is for the compromise they sent to us. I would not just say, here's my bank account, we have the money.
It
was a regular checking account, So their change was a regular checking account, just naming it that, but then passing an ordinance saying they would only use the money for this, and then having us be able to check that account. I mean, that's the minimum I would do. I would recommend having two signers that they would have to, so they have checks and balances within their organization. That one person could just say, I could spend this money.
Right.
That's a minimum I would do. But as you saw, that they have now proven they can get a full-fledged escrow, but it would cost about, my guess is $5,000. So
I mean, that was my question, because I didn't see in there what it would cost to do it. Like, they talked about the difficulties of doing it. I don't have that background to know. I don't have to go to haven't done it myself. If it's going to cost them $5,000, I say then too bad. Like, they should just
that was the last money. Email I just sent, was they said they, looks like Wintrust can do $2,500, and then there would be another fee. So I'm just ballparking it would be about $5,000, is my guess.
I mean, at this point, and they said in there, it said they acknowledged we've taken the...
They did, because I was very honest with them. I'm like, you're asking a lot of my board.
Yeah.
For me to even bring it to you, I said, you're asking a lot.
Yeah, like they are, we already...
We're taking the beating here.
They already agreed to it, and now they're kind of...
Well, and they, here's the other thing. You know, they're a very small staff.
Yeah, so they don't have staff, they're volunteers.
Let's just say... You know, what you described, where you're requiring them to notify, that kind of starts getting kind of falls through the cracks and things. That, so I just...
I'd have to follow them.
Yes. You become their partner in this. And, you know, we publicly said, we've discussed this, we publicly said they're required to have either escrow or a surety bond.
Yes.
I don't feel like I want to explain why we've decided that it's okay for them not to.
Yeah. In full disclosure, there's one gentleman that emails me weekly, do they have the escrow yet? Do they have the escrow yet? Do they have the escrow yet? So I'm putting that out there too, because that's someone is getting very interested in that portion of it.
I think both of what you just said is reason enough to...
So my thought is they said they would have an escrow surety bond. If it costs $5,000, I'm sorry, that's what it costs.
Yeah.
With the caveat that, assuming I read your response to my question correctly, we could say, we'll open a bank account, we'll deposit your $300,000 in it, and anytime you need money for this project, show us the receipts and we'll give you the money.
Yeah, they would have to pay the bill, and then, because we couldn't pay the bill to the provider.
No, I'm not saying we would pay the bill.
Yes.
But show us the invoice from the contractor that says you owe them $50,000.
Yeah.
And we'll release $50,000 to you.
Carol's like shaking her head. Like,
yeah, I was just like, if I were Carol, I would say no way.
Carol's like, I'm not really comfortable with that. I think you're skirting that line of prevailing wage. That makes, I know the lawyer says it's okay.
Yeah, the attorney did.
He did say it was okay. It just makes me a little more, it's not as transparent to me. I don't know. But we could.
We could still have a write off.
Pardon me?
It's okay, but we could still have pressure.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, totally.
But it's
not
against the law.
No, it's not. No. And I don't think you're fully invested in what we're talking about right now. You don't know all the details.
Let them get the escrow.
It's ridiculous. We have a contract. To me, if we even spend one more minute on talking about this, it's a waste of my time.
All right. telling you, I am totally fine with that.
Yes. And I will also say,
if it can't happen,
I will also say that we spent an enormous amount of energy getting this provision into the lease, and to now see it come back again as maybe we won't. It was on the beach when I heard that. It was almost unbearable to hear this was coming up again. So
we're up against 45 seconds. You got 15 more seconds.
Okay.
Can I ask a question?
You can.
I am confused that now that property is up for sale. So did the developer who bought it? They are now reselling?
No, I think they put sale and then interested. It's going to be developed. So they're not selling.
They probably put it for sale with a picture of what the house is going to look like.
They're
going to
sell a spec.
Yeah, they're specking.
I see a picture. I just saw it for sale and I was so confused.
Well, so then you could work with them about what kind of house or something.
Okay.
Yeah.
But the people who bought it are still the people who are going to
correct.
Right now,
they're still there.
They're building a spec house to sell.
Yep.
Yeah. On that property. So at this point, I guess from what the update I got today, and we will continue to update our website until they get theirs fixed, is that they're working with the homeowner right now on the construction fence on the homeowner's property in order to start taking off pieces of the thing.
Oh, that's right.
And then they still have to do like soil borings and things like that on our property. So the construction fence on our property won't go up for another 3 weeks or so. They'll probably come do the soil bearings first,
yeah,
and then we'll put the construction fence up after that. So we're still a good 3-4 weeks away.
Okay.
And that's if they get this escrow, because I said you can't start to, you can't pay any money until the $300,000 is in that escrow account. So.
I should know this, and I don't. Is the calendar up on either our site or their site yet?
Calendar of what?
Like the timeline that
No, because I don't think they have it yet.
Is it up there on their site that we're still working on it?
Yes. Right? So we put a whole list of questions or answers to all the questions that we have answers to now. It has not been updated since last week because nothing has changed, because they really have not been able to do a thing while they're working out this escrow thing.
Yeah.
So they approached me last week, and I said, you know, I really want escrow, and I was pushing them. I'm like, if I have to ask the board for a change in that, it would happen Tuesday. It would not happen before that. So I said I would keep on working on the solution, because if they say no, they say no.
I really am disappointed with the Glencoe Historical Society for not living up to its word and saying they're going to put a calendar on their website. I understand that maybe a month ago they had someone who was sick that couldn't do it. To me, it shows that they are not abiding by what they told the citizens. I know that we have it on our site, but that is very frustrating.
I think they had some internal issue. You have to remember, I'm not making excuses for them, but they are a volunteer organization, and then they had sick people and things like that. But in the meantime, there is from what they know, from all the answers to the questions they have provided to me, and we did put them on our website, their link there, and to the village, so... I think they are living up to that portion of it.
Anything else?
I think as soon as the escrow is established, they plan to do some construction fencing.
Yes.
Kind of get...
Correct.
Right.
Going.
And also pay bills they already have. Because they've paid, incurred costs already.
Yeah. But Dudley did talk to the donor, I guess, this weekend, and we know they have the money. So.
And it's in their best interest to get this escrow up and going. And by the way, the bankers ought to be able to do that lickety-split. I don't know why. But in any case, it's in their best interest because they have invoices on their desk right now that they need to pay. So everyone's motivated to get rolling with that.
Exactly.
Nice.
All right. Anything else?
Is there any other business, Lisa?
I do not have any other business.
Okay.
We have a board meeting next week, just a reminder.
Mm-hmm.
That we're working on the board packet right now. So.
Oh, right.
Do we want to, I know it's 9 o'clock, I don't know what the proper protocol is for this, but...
For bonds?
Yeah.
Actually, to be honest with you,
we... If we table it, we can, but...
We, it's not really table. We have it on the agenda for next week at the board meeting, and our Eric will be there to... answer any questions you have. That's been planned the whole time, was to have him come in next week and talk about all the changes that are happening and all the everything to go with it, and he can answer any questions you have.
Are we voting on it next week?
No.
Okay.
No.
Good.
No vote. We may we're going to put on the agenda, just so you know, if you want to call a special board meeting, because interest rates are so low, that we'll have it on there that we have the ability, action item that says we're calling a special board meeting on April 7th or whatever.
Yeah.
If you don't want to, then we just don't act on that action item. We just say that's tabled.
Okay.
So it's ability to do that, but you don't have to act on it. Interest rates are incredibly low right now, as you can imagine.
Yeah.
So
we're in an unprecedented world. Of
yes, we are, aren't we? So
there's two viewpoints here you've got to think about. So
I would just everybody take a deep breath, and then Eric will explain all that next week and answer any questions you have, and look forward to a great discussion on that.
Thank you.
Okay, so maybe perhaps we shall adjourn. I entertain a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
All in favor?
Aye.
Motion passes.
Who was it? Kobe and then?
No, Kobe never seconded.
Second? Underdone?
It was me.
It was Josh.